The Winklevoss twins are the first confirmed Bitcoin billionaires. According to a report from the Telegraph, Cameron and Tyler Winklevoss, who notably sued Mark Zuckerberg for allegedly stealing their idea for Facebook, invested $11 million into the international cryptocurrency in 2013. And after a massive surge last week, their Bitcoin empire surpassed $1 billion. As noted by The Verge, Bitcoin has surged over 10,000% since the Winklevoss investment, when one coin traded at around $120. The brothers have held on to every Bitcoin, not selling a single one of the $11 million investment. This coming to us from the Daily Wire. Closing argument. My name is Walter Hudson, Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM, TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com, and your iHeartRadio app are two ways to stream us. We're here 9 to 11 weeknights. You can catch up with the past programs, the podcast, right there in your iHeartRadio app. Just do a search for Closing Argument. We are joined on the phone by Doug Scribner. Appreciate you coming on with us tonight, Doug. How you doing?
Great. Happy to be here.
Happy to have you. Now, you are, tell us a little bit about your expertise with Bitcoin.
Well, I'm one of the guys who discovered it in 2010 and then in 2011 began buying it. And listening and understanding and trying to understand, and a lot other people smarter than me thought it was an interesting idea for the philosophical continuation of freedom and liberty,
right.
And
right.
To assist liberty and to help us gain more liberty from government and their financial manipulation of all currencies in the world.
So I know this is a big question, but in as concise a manner as you can, how does Bitcoin do that? How do cryptocurrencies generally do that?
They are outside of the current fiat system. They're outside of the banking system. Bitcoin is not controlled by governments, politicians, corporations, or any single person, even groups of people. So therefore, it is a new asset class that is not correlated to any of the existing asset classes. And so it achieves the fight and helps the fight for liberty because it is so outside of the system.
So without getting too deep into the technical weeds, how is it able to accomplish these miracles? What are the characteristics of Bitcoin that enable it to be transacted anonymously and to circumvent government regulation?
Well, it happens on the internet, and it uses cryptography. So there's a certain amount of anonymity, although it's not perfectly anonymous. In fact, law enforcement likes Bitcoin, the ones who understand it, because it's easier to track because it's a public ledger.
Mm.
Now, that doesn't mean you're going to be tracked. It
right.
just means that if police doing good police work can discover someone's Bitcoin, a criminal's Bitcoin address,
right.
And they can see where the money goes.
Right, right, right.
You can't do that with a $100 bill or $20 bill or a suitcase full of bills.
Mm-hmm. But presumably, not to provide aid and comfort to our criminal friends out there, but presumably if you suspected that you were being tracked in that way, you could just transfer your Bitcoin to another anonymous account and go on your merry way.
There's ways, certainly. And understand, criminals of all kinds have always used technology first because
sure.
They're criminals.
Right,
you know,
right.
The first cars were used by criminals to get away from the police on their horses.
Sure. Yeah,
right?
Right.
So that's just technology in general.
Right.
It's neutral. It's not good. It's not bad. It's neutral. It's the power of the person and the individual who uses it.
Right.
Right.
So tell us about, in your opinion, what is it that's fueling this massive surge of value in Bitcoin, and is it indeed a bubble, as many people, a Ponzi scheme, as folks have characterized it? Is this something that's going to end up crashing?
I don't think so. And here's why. Like I said, this is a brand new asset class that hasn't existed before. It's as if a new kind of metal were discovered in the ground that had better electrical qualities, better strength. It was lighter.
Mm.
It could be built with more things.
Right.
The industries that spring up around that new metal would be amazing and would fuel what some people will call a bubble, but others would see as a brand new asset class, like the Winklevoss twins that you talked about.
Right.
They saw the technology. They realized the potential. They understood enough about it to get in early and knew it would change the world.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they didn't know that, but they took the gamble like
right,
I did.
Sure,
I
right,
didn't know
yeah.
that, but I think it's going to change the world and already has in a way that the internet has. You know, it touches every piece of our life, the internet does. It's used by law enforcement and governments and hospitals and school children and teachers and radio show hosts. Right.
Yeah. Well, okay. There's another article in here that I was reading earlier today that talks about how Wall Street is reacting to the rise of Bitcoin on the financial scene, and they're starting to trade it. They're starting to create derivatives based off of it. I mean, this is something that's starting to embed itself into the mainstream financial culture.
Yeah, and that's why I believe it's not a bubble. This is a discovery process in its early days still. One of the largest exchanges in the U.S. is signing up 100,000 people a day now. It's called Coinbase. And that's a lot of new people who are trying to figure this out, trying to buy some all at once. Right. And then, like you said, the derivatives, the stock traders, the hedge fund managers, if 1% of all these hedge funds moved into some form of cryptocurrency, the price is going to be up from here, not anywhere down. There'll be corrections along the way, like any good market, but I think it's going to go up for a long time because not because of some crazy speculative bubble, but because it's a brand new asset class, it's a brand new store of value that has not existed before today.
So
and I want to give you some.
Yeah, well, we were talking about this before you came on the air. Even though I believe that I understand the fundamentals of Bitcoin and I've been familiar with it in passing for quite some time, I've never gotten on board the train. And in talking with you earlier in the day, I went ahead in preparation for tonight and downloaded an app and got my Bitcoin wallet all set up on my phone. So where am I supposed to go from here?
So you see where it says request?
Okay. Hitting request.
At the bottom, it says copy.
Okay, copying.
Copy that into our Facebook chat. This is a big, long address, which is like a Swiss bank account number that changes every time you use it.
Gotcha. All right, going through the motions here, bringing up our Facebook conversation, pasting this long address in there. Click send. You should be getting it now.
I got it.
Okay.
I'm going to my Bitcoin wallet on my phone.
All right.
I'm hitting send.
Okay.
I'm pasting your address in, and I'm putting in $25. That's how much I like you.
Wow. Well, I really appreciate that contribution to the program. And I got a notification on my phone. You've received Bitcoin. And I just lost the notification. I'll bring it up here shortly. But it should be noted that all of this is taking place without any reference to any sort of identifiable information. You don't have my username. I don't have yours. If we were able to communicate without, you know, if we didn't know who the other one was and we were communicating in some form, this could still be taking place. And I do have the confirmation here that I've received 0.001827 Bitcoin, which translates to $24.91.
Right, exactly. So what's interesting is this is the first method of trustless transfer of value. I don't have to know who you are. That number could have come from somebody who I didn't know, but I wanted to do business with them because I'm maybe buying some alpaca socks from them. So let me ask you something. When you downloaded that app, did you put in your email address?
No.
Phone number?
Nope.
Social Security number?
No.
Anything like right. So nobody knows that number is you, and nobody knows that the number that I sent from is me. But the entire Bitcoin network is public, and everybody could see that transaction.
Sure.
They would just see numbers.
Right.
So it's really amazing. So you could have been in China. That could have been $3 million.
Right.
And it still would have taken 2 seconds to send.
That's amazing. That's absolutely amazing. And I tend to agree with you. I think this is the dawn of a new asset class, as you put it, a new thing. I remember, you know, I first started hearing about this, man, I want to say back in as early as, is 2006 sound too early?
Yeah, it didn't get created until 2009.
Okay.
And really, 2010 was the first year was under a dollar.
Okay, so somewhere back around the birth of my son is when they first started talking about this. And when I first started hearing about it and just the notion that it's virtual currency and, you know, again, avoiding the technical gobbledygook, there is an enforced scarcity to this. There are only so many Bitcoins in the virtual world, and they cannot be duplicated or forged or whatever the case may be. So there is this sort of inherent, artificially mandated store of value, scarcity, yeah, and store of value. And so it functions in the same way as any other store of value does. It just happens to exist in a virtual form.
Except it's better than, a lot of listeners of this show like gold and silver, and that's great. But you can't send gold and silver through the internet in 13 seconds.
Right.
You know, and you can't walk into a Starbucks to spend gold and silver. But sure. I can walk into a Starbucks with a gift card that I bought with Bitcoin 2 seconds earlier and buy myself a latte.
So because I haven't even looked into this yet, but what kind of vendors, you mentioned Starbucks, where can I spend this money?
Well, Starbucks doesn't take Bitcoin, but they take Starbucks gift cards, and I can buy Starbucks gift cards through a vendor called Gift, G-Y-F-T, all day long, as well as about 500 other gift cards.
Sure.
Now, famously, Overstock.com takes Bitcoin.
Okay.
So my girlfriend buys sheets from Overstock.com with Bitcoin. I bought a big screen TV with Bitcoin on Overstock.com. Also, Dish Network, Expedia.com for hotels. There are many places that take Bitcoin, but funny thing, on the way to becoming where it is today, it's become less of a currency and more of a store of value. So it's an interesting trip. It's actually kind of expensive to send Bitcoin. And when I say expensive, I mean it's orders of magnitude less expensive than sending a wire or a MoneyGram.
Yeah, sure. Right.
But that transaction I sent to you cost me about a dollar. Now, that's too much to spend for a small transaction.
Right. Yeah.
That's because Bitcoin is a victim of its own popularity. It's gotten so big and so quick. The network is becoming so used that it's becoming a little clogged up. And there are fixes in the future for that.
Sure. Right. Yeah. That's the kind of thing that changes with time, because as the market develops the need, then people are going to come in to fill that void.
Correct. Oh, and one thing else. I want people to realize that, to me, and to I hope everybody, Bitcoin is not an investment, really, although you can make money on it. But really, this is not investment advice. It's a philosophical revolution where people are taking back control of money from the government. You know, government controls money, but it only has done this for about 200 or 300 years. Mm-hmm. The rest of human history, money has been peer-to-peer, gold and silver.
Sure.
Kings put their faces on it, but still... Right. Gold was good in China, and it was good in England, and it was good in the colonies.
Yeah.
So we're going back to that time, away from central controllers and manipulators of currency and fiat. And boy, can they ruin our lives when they control those sorts of things. They drop bombs on people because of their manipulation of fiat, of the money they print.
Right. I appreciate your time, Doug Scribner. We'll have you on again when we get Bitcoin news, and appreciate your donation to the program.
No problem.
You take care.
Bye-bye.
Closing argument. My name is Walter Hudson. We'll take a call from Jonathan in Maple Grove when we return. He's been holding dutifully to talk about freedom of association as it relates to the Supreme Court's decision regarding the baking of cakes for gay weddings. Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM, TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com.